There'll be southwesterly gale in exposed areas. Rain, snow in the mountains from the afternoon. Westerly gale winds in the evening, fresh air. Nordmøre from northeasterly direction. Rain, snow above 400 to 700 meters. In the evening, 200 to 400 meters. And that was the weather report for today.
Where was the weather report for?
Western Norway.
Oh. Translated. Some rain? Just guessing.
Yeah, translated through Google Translate because I didn't find the English weather report.
There's a lot of sighing in the English weather report. Good morning.
Morning.
How is the weather in Bergen?
Still a bit hanged over, I guess, from last week.
Is that your personal weather system or Bergen generally?
We have a personified weather system in Norway.
Of course you do. Mm. It's like one per person. It's not that big an effort, right, to just kind of make one for each person in Norway, you know, because there's like 20 people in Norway.
Exactly. And how is Oslo?
Wet. We had lots of snow and now it's on its way out. I am sad. I like snow. I noticed when I was in Bergen last week, something that I had kind of forgotten about, I guess, because I've got used to it here. And it's not really weather related, but it made me laugh anyway, which is that people in Norway are just crazy for drilling tunnels into things. And I noticed this on my way from the airport because the bus drove past this enormous works, which I think is like a high-speed train right to the airport. And Norwegians do not piss around with drilling. Norwegians love to drill holes into mountains. The longer the mountain, the deeper the hole, the better. So they seem so very happy about drilling holes and things. And it was kind of nice to see that that's happening in Bergen as well as Oslo, because Oslo has a lot of drilling right now. Anyway, that was road report, so we now return you to regular programming.
Well, if you travel by car for a bit in the western part of Norway, you will go through a lot of mountains.
Yeah. In that regard, I feel like Grieg was actually ahead of his time, the whole of the Mountain King thing. Like, it's happening. It's just like 3 kilometers underground and you're in a car. But that's, yeah, it's real.
We have still to move into the tunnels, though. We mostly just drive through them.
Are you saving them for the zombie apocalypse?
No comment.
In London, the tube, the underground, got used a lot in the war, for example, as a place for people to go and hide out during the Blitz. People went down into the underground and sort of stayed safe there. And I think Norway could do the same. It would just be kind of in a road tunnel somewhere. They're pretty grim, actually. Like, the underground at least is warm, but these tunnels, like, they have water dripping and stuff.
I think perhaps the London Underground would be the last place I go if there were a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, me too. I don't think that works out well for anyone.
Actually, tunnels. I'm pretty tired of the tunnels.
Why's that?
Well, I had driven a lot between Bergen and Oslo, and there is this tunnel called the Lærdal Tunnel. And it's like, I think it's almost 30, no, it's like 25 kilometers. So it's pretty long.
Continuously?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And, well, they have made some light shows and stuff, like every quarter of it. But when you have seen it one time, you have sort of seen it all. And this is pretty late, especially when driving from Oslo. It comes pretty sort of late in the trip, and I always struggle to stay awake for it.
Just to be clear, are you driving at this point?
Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about this. Can you get one of those Pavlok things that just kind of intermittently shocks you into remaining awake?
Yeah, I guess that would be a sort of a life hack.
But then you'd like start to be afraid of driving.
Yeah, exactly.
At least you wouldn't have to get through the tunnel.
So I don't know if there are any solutions to it. Perhaps flying.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't drive to Oslo. Why would you drive to Oslo and not take the train?
Perhaps if you want to take your dogs with you, or that you perhaps are going other places where there are no trains, for example, or many reasons.
Just out of interest, are dogs allowed on trains here?
Yeah, I think they actually are. Yeah, because there are sort of pet tickets, if you can say that.
That's cute, yeah. Yeah, you see people with dogs on public transport in the UK. Buses and trains, actually. But yeah, I just wondered. Okay, that's nice. So this is version two. This is our attempt number two to record this episode, episode 11. The first one did not go great. Well, the first one went great, right? Like, we started recording. It was fine. We were in the same room. We wanted to record an episode while I was in Bergen. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool, right, if we kind of sat opposite each other and actually recorded an episode in the same room? And what happened was that the interpersonal co-host chemistry was so intense that your laptop basically melted.
Well, I would guess it was the spirit of podcasts that thought it was too early.
It was early. I'm going to go away from spirit and towards gremlin, or possibly some kind of podcasting troll who lives in a tunnel.
Yeah, so this is our second crack at this 11th episode, and I just realized I'm turning into Tom Waits or something.
Yeah, you got that whole kind of husky thing going on. Are you getting sick?
I think so.
Oh, no, don't do
that. I was pretty tired all weekend. Mm. Perhaps it's something to do with the little conference we arranged last week.
Right, yeah. I felt like I'd been hit by a truck for most of the weekend, so yeah, it could be. And I didn't even have to do any of the preparing.
But you did a talk.
I did a talk. And, you know, I helped out, and I was seriously short on sleep last week.
How was it to, was this your first conference talk in Norway?
I guess so. I guess it was, yeah. But it was in English, so it feels like a bit of a cheat. The real test will be doing one in Norwegian.
How was the conference experience?
It was delightful, actually. It was really nice. I spent a lot of it kind of doing things rather than being a conference attendee. But it sounds like the feedback is pretty positive from the conference, so that's cool. This is Stormcast Conference. We haven't said this explicitly. We talked about it a couple of episodes, I think, ago. But yeah, really nice conference. Good vibe. Lots of interesting speakers. So enjoyed myself very much.
Again, I guess we would be perhaps a bit biased.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Since your company ran it.
But for sort of conference attendees and the social dynamics that appear at such gatherings, did you observe anything?
I think the only difference that I noted was that in the UK and other places, when I've spoken at a conference, for the rest of the day, people want to talk to you as a speaker because they have stuff to ask you about or comment on or whatever. And I did not get that at all. People saw me and clocked me and went, oh, that's the person who had done that, you know, who gave that talk. But no one approached me. And it's hard to know whether that's because they didn't have anything to say, or
they're a little bit kind of reticent. Is that a difference maybe in how Norwegians are at conferences or something else, you know, that I don't know? Like, it might be that they absolutely hated my talk. I don't think so. I saw the feedback. It's, you know, it's okay. So hopefully it wasn't that they hated my talk.
I think perhaps it is that people are a bit, what did he call it? The R word.
Reticent.
It's one of those things I... Well, you have it in the university as well. After having a lecture, it isn't that common that students come down to you and sort of ask follow-up questions.
Oh, really?
You have always one or two, perhaps, that is... those guys, but
the mature students usually. Yeah, okay. I used to get quite a lot of questions. I think it, yeah, afterwards, because again, people often don't want to like ask you at the time, right? No one wants to sort of, hey, I have a question that I want everyone to hear. People would much rather come and talk to you quietly afterwards. But yeah, I didn't get any of that at all this time, but that may have to do with things that are not to do with Norway. I don't know.
Everything in Norway has to do with Norway. Just throwing that out there.
Thanks.
So what happened in Sweden yesterday?
Well, according to Twitter, a whole bunch of naked people ran around in the snow. Seems completely plausible to me.
And they were natives and not immigrants?
That's right. No words. I think we should move on.
I'm considering doing the conversation that every podcast seems doing these days. Namely, the I'm going to quit Twitter conversation.
We can go there.
At least quit reading it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I started this day reading this whole piece on 4chan and Trump and the alt-right, and it's not a good way to start today.
No, it isn't. If you want to, like, feel kind of any kind of joy whatsoever, that is not how to start the day, or the week, for that matter. I hear you.
So, last week... I saw a movie.
Tell us about the movie.
Called Arrival.
I thought you were going to say John Wick 2.
I saw that as well, but I already forgotten it. So, yeah, that is my review, I guess.
Okay.
Keanu Reeves were pretty good, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's badass when he's sort of kicking ass and taking names. He's fun to watch.
Mm. Yeah, Arrival. That was a different movie, I guess.
Different from John Wick 2, or...?
Indeed.
Different generally. I think it's different than most things I've seen in the cinema.
Yeah, it was one of those movies. It was not belonging to any IP, as you say. It was not a superhero movie or a remake or anything. It was...
It is based on a book. We should acknowledge that.
True, and perhaps it is the Contact of our decade.
Right. Contact 2.0. 2.0 is such a dated phrase, let's not call it that.
2.0 is such a 2.0 phrase.
Right. Okay.
And, yeah, why are we talking about Arrival in a podcast about... what is this podcast about?
I wish I knew.
Yeah. Well, it is about language immersion, I guess.
Right. So, very superficial and missing the point treatment of Arrival. Spoilers herein, I'm sure. It's a movie about a maybe 40-ish red-haired woman who learns a new language and it changes her life. Totally missing the point, blah, something, something aliens. So, although my life has not been like the movie Arrival in any way recently.
That being said, Norwegians tend to have tentacles.
Sure, but I was going to gloss over that. I don't want to make our listeners uncomfortable. It's fine. It's fine, really. They're very, very nice people. The tentacles are not weird.
And we have an obscure fascination for ink.
Go figure.
Yeah, but back to your point, you somewhat could sort of sympathize with the main character.
Yeah, fair to say.
Empathize, yeah.
Both. When I saw it, it was a really nice movie for me to watch because it's very easy to feel quite lonely in the acquisition of a new language in a new country. And it was really nice to watch someone else experiencing that stuff, minus the new country thing, but, you know, weirder because aliens, so new country with bells on. And it made me think a lot about the experience of uncertainty and learning a new language and being adrift, which is where the protagonist of the story finds herself. And like the thing there is that, of course, it changes how she thinks to such an extent, that the acquisition of this new language changes how she thinks to such an extent that it affects events in the world and with her, and it changes. That's all kind of the crux of the story without wanting to give too much away. And of course, that's not happening to me. But what is happening to me ongoing is that the experience of this very intense experience of learning a language has changed a lot about how I am. And that's kind of weird and interesting and subjectively fascinating, but also kind of weird.
How has it changed who you are?
I keep trying to come up with ways of describing what it's done to me. And I'm a bit reticent to say, reticent twice in one episode, wow.
Ding.
Indeed. A bit reluctant to sort of say it has changed my brain, but that anytime you learn anything, of course, it changes your brain. Like, duh.
What?
I know, stop everything, right? Yeah, every time you read about something changing your brain, yeah, it probably has because, like, you experience something. Hello.
That can't be healthy.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. We should ban it. Totally. Ban cinemas. Like, they're changing my brain right now. It's terrifying. Yeah. And the closest... I keep iterating on, like, my description of what has happened. And one of the things that it's done is it's completely rewired my motivational systems. And that sounds like that's a very overblown, fancy way. And it sounds... when I read this kind of thing that other people have written, it makes me sad because that's very badly put. But I have changed how I want to spend all of my time.
Do you mean that Norwegian is sort of the Pavlov of languages?
Maybe. Like, my tolerance for watching something that's kind of mildly interesting on TV has just gone away. I'm like, this is a waste of time. My tolerance for reading things that have little worth has just gone to the floor. Like, it's a waste of time. The value that I got and continue to get from learning a new language is so high and so kind of Moorish that now everything that I do almost feels like it has to have lots of value. It has to be really good use of my time. And that has implications for, like, me and the people that I know and what I do with myself when I'm not, you know, at work. So, yeah, I'm a dude in flux.
Could you say that you have started experiencing time differently? Just to stick on the Arrival spoiler train.
Nice. To some extent, yeah. Like, I'm kind of much more aware of the value of time and how I spend it and what I do with it. And, like, what is the point of this hour that I'm spending? Not this hour. I know what the point of this hour is. But, you know, it's made me a very harsh critic of the efficacy with which I use time. Hmm. So yeah, to that extent, yeah, vaguely related.
So this movie, it I guess it builds its premise on, and they even call it out, I guess, the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis.
Worf, but yeah.
Worf.
You know, like the guy in Star Trek.
No, I don't. I don't know the guy in Star Trek.
And that speaks very highly of you.
The only thing I know that Han shot first. Ugh.
Oh, you went there. You went there. People are writing in right now. Do you know that Star Wars and Star Trek are different franchises?
The Star Treks and the Spoiler Wars. Yeah, okay. So, the Sapir-Whorf? Worf? Right.
Keep saying that. Makes you sound like a dog.
Sapir. Sapir?
I think so.
And what is the hypothesis, Chris?
Oh, wow. Way to put me on the spot. Well, people argue about this on the internet all day long. The watered-down version of the hypothesis is that the language that you use affects how you think about things. So, for example, there's a study with native speakers of Russian where they have to differentiate between two different colours of blue. Russian has two words for blue, one meaning a light blue and one meaning a dark blue. And the study demonstrated that this effect, the effect of that difference in language, could be seen in people's sort of response behaviours and wasn't apparent in languages, in native speakers of languages that only have one word for blue.
And we are balancing on the edge of a whole nature, nurture, culture, language, innate, evolutionary psychology abyss now.
Only a Norwegian could string together that many modifiers on one noun. Mad respect to you, sir. Mad respect. Yeah, but right.
Yeah, so this hypothesis, it reminds me about the articles from where one researcher has found a small tribe in the Amazon with the, they don't have numbers above 3, so they can't count and stuff like that.
Right. It's like 1, 2, 3 many lots or whatever, right? Like it's, yeah.
And Noam Chomsky. So, yeah.
You're right, actually. We can just finish all the conversations in this episode with, yeah, and Noam Chomsky. Yeah. Yeah, the kind of the rad end of the Sapir-Whorf interpretation, I guess, is that, like, acquiring another language, you know, and this is kind of where the movie goes with it, and then some, I think over and above what most linguists would tolerate, is that acquiring a new language or acquiring a language can radically alter your way of thinking. And my experience has been not noticeably in that way, but rather just the experience of learning a new language has changed stuff. But I'm not sure I could speak to the different ways of thinking. That said, because there's not a one-to-one mapping between words in English and words in Norwegian, it's often the case that I'm speaking in English and there's a concept that I want to use that there's not really quite the word for in English, and I want to use the Norwegian word, but that's not helpful to the person I'm speaking to.
For example?
Oh God, put me on the spot, why don't you? I'm going to have to come back to that.
Yeah. So during my university studies, I was quite interested in sort of the dynamics between language and culture and how cultures were different and so on. As any students in the humanities or social sciences was. So, because this reminded me about a French anthropologist called Maurice Bloch. And he wrote a series of articles about sort of the h- how cultures sort of was similar but different. I'm coming to the point. And he made a study in, I think it was, I've forgotten, Madagascar, about storytelling. And I just remember this vaguely, so I apologize if it's wrong, but I think it was something like they had this storytelling thing where they sort of, the storytelling happened sort of in the landscape whilst walking. So it didn't have the linear temporal structure. It was sort of mixed and connected to the spatiality. And
wow.
In Norwegian, we could say spatialitet.
Mm.
Or we couldn't, but we do. but yeah. And this I guess this is recorded by other anthropologists as well as a sort of a proof that they are thinking fundamentally different than, for example, Westerners. But he made a point of when I came back to the sort of the dwellings and stuff like that, they could tell the same story in a more linear, sort of air quotes, normal way. And this had been missed by the earlier anthropologist.
Right.
And sort of mapping the different modes of narrative within the culture and stuff like that sort of became his thing. And he wrote that a good line, I think, one time, that you shouldn't mix ritual communication with everyday feelings.
Whoa.
Which is sort of a way to say that, yeah, you have different modes of communication and thinking and so on in cultures, often sort of crystallized in rituals or sort of these scripted interactions. But when you come home and sort of everyday life returning, it is usually the same kind of things that emerge wherever.
Hmm.
So it opens for sort of fundamental differences at the same time at it opens for all the small, not that significant differences, I guess. And in the next lecture, we are going to... but yeah. It's interesting.
It is pretty interesting. I like that there's like a huge swathe of kind of academic study that's just about trying to understand people's basic humanness. I didn't want to say humanity, that felt like the wrong thing, but like, you know, all the behaviours that are kind of the same underneath-ish, more or less. That's pretty interesting. I like it. I'm not sure I have anything to add. I need to digest.
Yeah, where to go from here?
Total tangent. Which follow-up? Mark Gould sent us a really cool clip of a Scottish politician speaking in Norwegian, being interviewed on NRK, I think, in Norwegian, as you do, about the situation in Scotland and what's going to happen with regard to Brexit and whether Scotland's going to have another independence referendum as a result of Brexit. And this guy is speaking in pretty fluent, not flawless, but pretty fluent Norwegian. And he's a Scottish MP, and I was just like, this is the best thing. And so nice, quite aside from anything else, so nice to hear someone speaking Norwegian with a Scottish accent, which I really dug. He was very clear. I don't know, what did you think about his Norwegian? I spotted a couple of errors with prepositions, but I was mostly fascinated by just listening.
Prepositions are the worst.
Yeah, they are.
Norwegians can't even.
But, that's reassuring.
But this clip made me highly suspicious.
Okay.
So every immigrant critic eye is, I guess, turned south. But perhaps we should turn them west.
You're worried that there's some kind of Scottish invasion quietly occurring on the western, possibly on the western border of Norway. So, like, something you're on the front line.
Are they teaching Norwegian in schools now?
Det bør jeg ikke snakke om, egentlig.
So maybe you can enlighten me. Why did he talk Norwegian? Because he wasn't a diplomat.
No, he has a PhD in some flavour of Scottish linguistics and or Scottish language, and I forget exactly. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Do you mean that your politicians actually have educations?
It has been known from time to time.
Oh.
Some of them even have higher education. For whatever the one after a higher... What's the one after a higher education? Even higher education?
Higher education.
Even higher education. Okay, good title.
We should try that here.
I think this would be atypical, fair to say, the extent to which this gentleman has spent time in education as someone who is now a serving politician. But she asks him at the end, actually, like, you know, like, how is it that you speak such good Norwegian? And he says, I really like Norway, more or less. And they don't go into it any further. And I'm not clear what his personal motivations are, whether he just really likes languages in Norway. I would surmise that he's kind of a bit of a language nerd.
Norwegian gives you the ability to see in the future.
Right.
I'll bet that there will be some kind of newspaper feature article with him about how it is that he talks Norwegian.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be... let's go find out, actually. All right. Notes to come in the show notes. More on this as it develops. Now back to the studio.
Yeah, so thanks for that.
Thanks, Mark. It was awesome.
Do keep sending more clips of Scots speaking Norwegian.
Or anyone else.
Or Norwegian speaking Scottish.
Okay, yeah, we need to find a clip of that.
Well, we have Norwegians speaking Norwegian as a Scottish person.
Right.
Yes.
I haven't done my homework.
You haven't seen the clip?
I haven't seen the clip. I'm sorry. It got shelved. There was a lot happening.
Yeah, because you're still talking to me. So.
Oh, God.
You haven't seen the clip. Okay.
Is it that bad?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Do you have it in you to attempt a Scottish accent in English? Do you have it in you to attempt a Scottish accent in English? Could you impersonate a Scottish person while we sit here talking?
Yes and.
You can go away and practice for a week if you like.
Well, that will be my homework, I guess.
I guess so.
So we talked about your... Oh, damn it. It's one of those words again. Electricity. Yeah, nailed it. Electricity work going on in your ceiling.
Right.
And you made a point of having sort of a power outlet sort of high up there.
Right.
For your lamp. And I wondered why this was so outrageous for you, but then I was reminded about your power plugs in the UK.
Go on.
And which are absurd.
Say more.
It's more like power blocks.
Because they're big.
They are huge and bulky and, yeah.
They are disgusting and ugly, and I feel no affinity with them whatsoever, if that helps. And, I don't know if you know this, but, like, right, you know the kind of, the universal understanding of pain and, oh, when someone mentions the idea that you stand on a Lego brick, right?
Mm.
Now imagine standing on an upturned British plug, if you will. For those not familiar with British plugs, they have three pins, and it's entirely possible because of the design of the plug that this thing sits on its flat back with its little three legs in the air, and the three little legs are pretty substantial. They're not rounded at the ends either, like at least one of them is kind of square. And it's basically one of the most uncomfortable things you can do in your life is stand on one of these by mistake. Who would design something like that?
Is this where the British uptightness comes from?
Yes, we just live in constant terror that we might one day stand on an upturned plug. And it's one of the reasons that we don't take off our shoes.
Well, I guess you failed at colonialism because you could sort of import a better design.
We failed at colonialism in the sense that we took everything that we knew how to do abroad and were promptly got our asses handed to us by the people there who could do it much better than we could. Norwegian plugs are great. Some of them are very small and slimline, and they're just very efficient. You get two pins, goes in the wall, boom, done. I think my only reservation about them is that sometimes if the socket is a little bit loose, it's possible for the plug to sag a little bit, like you don't have that third pin to hold everything in place. So that's kind of maybe less good design. But like the charger on my iPhone, it's just this little bit with two pins. It's great. It's really lightweight. It's not like lugging a refrigerator around after me when I have to, you know, take the lead with me.
In Norway, we have the best power plugs in the world.
Let's talk about doors opening. This Are is they? A thing that has come up frequently. This is a thing that has come up twice in the last week. My husband mentioned it to me, and I hadn't really thought about it. And then his brother came to stay with us this weekend, and he mentioned it. And I thought, okay, this is a thing. In Norway, doors open outwards from rooms way more than they do in the UK. If you have an office meeting room in the UK, it's almost certain that the door opens into the room. Here, all our meeting room doors open outwards. The door to the toilets opens outwards. And what this means in practice is that someone could be walking down the hall minding their own business and you come out of the loo and like smack them in the face with a door. It's really easy to do. And in our apartment building, all of the people's front doors to their apartments open out into the hall. So you have the same problem again, is that you can't really go out into the hall without kind of checking first that you're not going to smack someone in the face with the front door. And this doesn't really happen very much in the UK. Everything goes the other way. What is the deal with doors?
Well, I think we have to call Roman Mars and his podcast 99% because undoubtedly there will be an episode dealing with this, but I would think that it has something to do with safety, but then again, I'm not sure because...
What's so safe about smacking someone in the face? Or is that just how you say hello here?
If there's a fire, for example, bursting out in the meeting room for some reason, it would be easier for you to knock the door out. If it was closed, I don't know. But then again, you would think that it would be good if the door went inwards. Because if you were on the outside, you could sort of knock it down. I'm not sure.
We should call Roman. He should get on this case right now.
Or perhaps it's too... Well, if you want to get the most of the space in a room, you would have the door go out. Because the door are sort of taking space, right?
Yeah. The way that this works in the UK is, I feel, very British. It leads to a very British degree of discomfort in that when people are trying to enter or leave a meeting room, in the way that if you have a very small toilet cubicle and the door opens inwards, and you basically have to, like, straddle the bowl just to be able to kind of get in and out and lock the door behind you. Similar things can occur in meeting rooms where the door opens inwards and everyone is sort of trying to get in and out, but there's not really room and everyone has to wait and it's a pain. And yeah, that doesn't happen with these meeting rooms. Instead, we just smack people in the hallway in the face. So, you know, I guess it's a nice in-group, out-group distinction, right? Like, you know, I care about the people in the room with me, but screw those guys out there.
But has that happened?
There have been a couple of close calls.
Mm.
Okay. I'm sure it's only a matter of time before I do this to someone and they become mortally offended and, you know, I'm asked to leave.
So this conversation didn't go where I expected, because I expected the for how long should you stay with the open door, or do you open the door for other people at all thing. That's every...
Ooh. Okay, talk to me about how that works.
Your culture thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go there. Tell me about how it works in Norway.
I think you have... Well, at least it is a conversation, so people are not sure about this, and you have some that do it, and own it, I guess, so they can stand there for a while with the door open and not be that awkward about it. But I think most of us don't do it if it isn't sort of immediately. So if you come right behind me, I will not smack the door in your face, sort of. but if you are,
will you hold it for me to make sure that I get through it too?
This is a problem. I probably would,
because
I have
manners,
educations, and manners, and all that, right? And I like to be the last to a room.
Okay.
So I can be the first out, right? No. Right. But yeah, but I have experienced many times that people are not doing it, and I'm annoyed. So. As far as I'm a representative for the population of Norway, I guess we do it. But as far as I'm not, we don't.
Okay. Good. Well, that was you know, a nice broad generalization.
I would my advice would be if you come to Norway, you should
hold the door.
Hold the door.
Hmm.
Get out of the way.
There's an extra dimension to this from my perspective. So traditionally in the UK, traditionally, men would hold the door for women. And
because the doors were pretty heavy, and of course...
I am but a weak, frail creature.
Yeah.
Right.
And British men are the sort of... essence of muscle.
I'm sorry, have you met any British men? Yeah, this is really loaded, right? I was brought up to be polite. Well, I like to think so. And then I spent several years training in martial arts. And if there's one thing you get out of that, it's like hardcore emphasis on courtesy. So I am a diehard door holder for other people. And this started to cause friction when I started to work among public servants, many of whom were men, many of whom were a bit older than me. And it led to a lot of bottlenecks where I'd be trying to hold open a door for someone because I got there before they did. And they would insist, no, you go through the door first. And I have lost count of the number of times in my life that I have said, I'm holding it, please go through. Or some variation on that, or made a face to say, like, I'm holding it. Why would you swap places with me? Just go through the fucking door. Of course, you can't say that to someone who's being polite to you. So, you know, what you end up doing is going, no, really, please, it's fine, it's fine. And occasionally they refuse to move. And you're like, okay, fine, I'll go through the damn door. But good God. And so there's this kind of extra gender dimension there, leaving aside kind of British politeness and whatever and tradition and blah, blah, blah. But I like to hold the door for people, especially if you're, you know, there first, right? Like, why wouldn't you? I'm not sure I can add anything to that other than
Yeah, we haven't the gender thing. Well, I imagine that in the yesteryears, there were a gender thing among the high society, but...
People are still occasionally surprised that I'm holding a door here, but people were occasionally, / quite often surprised that I was holding a door in the UK. So yeah, I'm not sure that's different.
But the reason they are surprised is the fact that you are holding the door.
Ah, oh, because I'm a barbarian and they don't expect manners from me. I get that.
No, that we are barbarians that doesn't expect such niceties. Yeah. Okay. You tend to sort of try to drill a hole through the door.
Are there other ways that people are discourteous? People keep talking to me about Norwegian arm. Oh my God, have we talked about this before?
The Norwegian tentacle, you mean?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, what is the Norwegian arm?
Well, other than not being an Amy Mann album, but it sounds like one, this is a concept that I'd never heard of before coming to Norway, but it seems like one of those stories that Norwegians tell about themselves that hasn't actually gone beyond Norway. So it seems like the Norwegian self-concept is that Norwegians are very, very direct and very grabby. And if you're sitting around the table, if you're having like breakfast with people and you're sitting around the table and they want the butter and the butter is far away, they'll just reach over and grab it with no, would you pass the butter, please? Kind of, you know, like, I want the butter, I'm going to get the butter. And the degree of kind of self-deprecation in this was kind of noticeable to me. And I've sat at breakfast many times with people, with colleagues and other people. I've never noticed anyone do anything that I would have thought of as rude at all. So I think this is entirely in your heads, this Norwegian arm, this idea that people are really grabby. Mm-mm.
So you haven't experienced that a person would sort of lean all over the whole of the table in order to reach something on the other side?
A few times, but you would get that in the UK as well. Sometimes.
Okay, so let's establish this, because this happens all the time, that sort of, instead of asking, could you pass the X, you would just grab over and take it, right?
Right.
And so that is called the Norwegian arm. But what you are saying, that it isn't especially Norwegian.
I think so. Also, I think the kind of the ridiculousness of it is overstated. I haven't seen anyone do anything like, I guess I can imagine, you know, like if there's a tablecloth on the table and someone just really leans over, they drag the tablecloth and everything goes with the tablecloth. But people don't seem to believe in tablecloths here where I've eaten breakfast, so it's never really come up.
So you want to give us a pass on this?
Oh, totally, yeah.
But I wonder about the implications, because the Norwegian arm concept, it is a recognition that this is sort of rude, that it would perhaps be better to just ask people to pass it around, because sometimes you are actually blocking people from eating, right? so it can be quite disruptive in a sort of an unintentioned way.
How dare you come between me and my open sandwich? How dare you?
And this, when this is a thing that is salient to us, right? And we're still doing it. What does that make us? We are sort of, we are rude and we know it.
Nah, I like to think that you have weighed very carefully all the possible options here and you've concluded that it's still most efficient to reach over and grab the butter for yourself.
Yeah, let's go for that explanation.
And I'm totally there with you. I'm a big fan of efficiency.
I got a sore from patting my own back, by the way.
Yeah, you should swap hands maybe once in a while.
Instead of patting my own back cack-handedly.
Oh, nice. Very good. Politeness. Yeah.
Apropos cacks. Is that a word?
Cacks. Just cack. Singular. Cack. It's like a mass noun.
But cack in plural? Kick? Kicks? Cacks?
I got nothing.
No, okay. because you had some homework. You were to watch something on the internet, as you do. So last time we talked about the Tolkien nerd black metal group, Gorgoroth.
Right. And this is a great video, and it is great. It's painfully great. What's his name? Is it Gral?
Gal.
Yeah.
It's like if you were to translate it, it would be either mad with an age somewhere or crazy, which doesn't.
Crazy doesn't work. It makes him sound really kind of. No, not at all. It just makes him sound a bit like.
Crazy with a cape, perhaps.
Yeah, Norwegian black metal. Woo! We're crazy, man. Yeah, no, the antithesis of that. We have to put a link in the show notes. This is amazing. It's just this guy who is just absolutely stone faced, serious, and drags this Italian film crew up a mountain for which they're very badly prepared.
I said Italian. No, I think they perhaps are Canadian. Or
yes.
Something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I forget.
I said the wrong thing initially. But that is because we have quite a lot of Italian black metal tourists here.
That's the Venn intersection of some things that I did not think I would experience in this lifetime.
Yeah, and this we have to circle back to this in a later episode. The bucket of things we are circling back to in later episodes.
It's increasingly fractal.
Yeah. but yeah. So yeah, it's very putative.
And
not to spoil it, but the last 5 minutes of this video was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Don't pause it. Just keep watching. Just, it is, as you say, pillow TV in the worst way. We were talking about politeness.
Pardon?
Oh, very good. Excuse me? I'm terribly sorry. Could you repeat that, please?
I think polite phrases was one among the first things we learned in English.
Really?
Hello, how are you? Pardon? Excuse me.
Did you at the time feel that this was a very different culture that was teaching you these terribly polite, antiquated phrases?
Well, yeah, somewhat. Yeah. Well, the attention to politeness felt different.
I noticed, actually, that if someone says something that I don't quite catch, it seems perfectly legitimate here to just say, what did you say? Vasadi. I hear people saying it a lot, and I picked it up. And that would be perhaps considered slightly direct in English. It's not rude, I don't think, but it would be politer to say pardon.
Or and what about the more huh?
I hear that occasionally, but that seems like it's reserved for like things bordering on what the fuck.
No, not necessarily.
No? All right.
It can also be, I completely missed what you said now.
Where I'm trying to work around to with this is that we said we would talk about Jantelon today.
Have you said that?
We said that in the previous episode.
Which is, we said that, okay, yeah, so we have to do it. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? Well,
that was a brash segue.
It was pretty brutal, wasn't it? I just thought I would do us a handbrake turn there, otherwise we might never get there, and then like it would be past time to go to work. So
yeah, we have 5 minutes to do the antelope.
Shit. Okay. this is a thing that I only heard about a few years ago, and it's...
A few years ago?
Yeah.
Ah, in your Scottish, Norwegian classes, of course.
Not even. I'm trying to remember when it came up for me first. I think maybe when I was learning Swedish.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's a pan-Scandinavian law. So.
And you can view it as a tool to exert conformity, or you can view it as purely descriptive of how conformity is applied, or historically was applied in Scandinavia. And we'll put a link in the show notes. The law of Janta. Do you want to tell us about Janteloven? Using Wikipedia or not, as a cue, as you like.
Well, it's formulated as 10 rules. But in our attempt to record this episode, we saw that these rules aren't necessarily that discreet.
Right.
So to boil it down, it's something like, you are not to think you are anyone special or that you are better than us.
Right.
And I know that you took notice of some of, I think the, yeah, and we will not read all the rules, you can do it yourself, but what did you take?
I took exception.
Yeah, to the 10th.
Right. So the other rules are like, blah, 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 you're not special, you don't stand above the crowd, yeah. You're no better than we are. But then the last one, you're not to think you can teach us anything. And like, we talked about this a bit in the abortive episode that didn't record.
The first half of it will be released on cassette.
Right, like a B-side or something, right? Yeah. Or you can order it on like a wax cylinder. You know, the special kind of hipster edition. Yeah, you're not to think you can teach us anything. So, like, the rest of Janteloven is basically about saying, don't big yourself up, you're just one of us, you're no better. You may even be worse. But to not think you can teach us anything is basically to say homogeneity above über alles, basically, like, don't think for a second that we are going to change. Don't think that you can exert change. We will not have change. We will suppress change. And like what that made me think of is that Darwin would have a problem with this. Because that degree of inflexibility, that degree of refusing to adapt, refusing to consider new perspectives is not awesome from my perspective. Diversity is, you know, the only thing we got going for us, frankly, any of us.
But to be Jante's advocate, it still opens for the elite to teach themselves things and to adapt and to change on the cost of the oppressed.
I am never convinced that the elite are motivated intrinsically or extrinsically to change anything because it might knock them off their perch. Why would you change?
Well, now they have AI and machine learning, so it's different now.
Wow, that's a pretty heartfelt right?
Well placed. So, yeah, and the Jantelov is also, as the Norwegian arm, it is, I keep using this word, salient concept, because people know of it and think about it and talk about it. And it's mostly used explicitly when people feel that they are not recognized or sort of silenced for some reason.
So what happens? If I feel like I'm being quashed and not recognized, what would that look like?
If you want to be a true Norwegian, you would write an angry comment to the newspaper and point out that the Jantelov is still a thing.
So is this a thing that Norwegians are kind of actively rebelling against? This sort of having been kept in a box by Janteloven for all of this time?
Yeah, well, some Norwegians are, I guess. But yeah.
So the way that you phrased it to me before when we were talking about this was that it's kind of a flag that Norwegians throw up and say, hey, don't impose Janteloven on me. Like, stop doing that. So it feels like almost its time has passed and people are saying it's not, you know, this is not a thing that we should be doing anymore. Even though it clearly is still, to some extent, present in culture, right?
Yeah, and it's often about people with apparent success. But perhaps they are a bit eccentric or different, and they are sort of not let into the good society or to the credible TV shows and so on.
I thought this was an equitable country. I didn't think there was any barrier to entry for anyone.
Sure. Well, as always, everything is relative, so compared to something, perhaps. But for example, take our beloved US. I think they have a way higher ceiling height, which was a direct translation from Norwegan, I guess. Is that a picture you use? The height under the ceiling, sort of to express how accepting you are for different flares and personalities and...
No. Is it Takeda? Is that
yeah.
No. I'm trying to think of what the English language equivalent would be. Gosh. Just kind of the generosity with which you allow different perspectives or...
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I can't think of one. I'm going to have to come back to you on that.
But
we don't use that. I don't think.
Before now.
Right.
But especially when it comes to celebrity, I think the US has a history of being more... This is complex, I guess, but more open in a way? Or more accepting?
Oh, as a meritocracy? Or...
No. Like the mangfold.
Diversity,
yeah, exactly. As long as it's kept in the box of celebrity, I guess. But
right, and preferably you're white.
Yeah, but even there, the US, at least historically, was ahead of us.
In that?
They had non-white celebrities way before Norway had.
Well, didn't you guys only get like your first kind of non-white people in the last sort of 50 years or something?
Well, yeah.
Slight exaggeration, perhaps, but not much.
But still. But
damn, y'all are white, is what I'm saying. That's not true anymore, but
if you take a look at Norwegian celebrity. It has been quite boring and
homogenous.
Yeah, even within the homogeneity of Norway.
Hmm. Well, it's good that it's kind of branching out a bit now, right?
Yeah.
Like, I guess regional accents, skin color, blah blah. Yeah. Women. Woo.
Are they allowed to be on TV now? Or?
Women?
No.
Yeah, it's not sure. I feel like it's probably a different episode, but I want to talk about being funny and funny women, unless you think that's 2 minutes, in which case let's talk about it right now.
It's not even 1 minute because women aren't funny. Moving on. Can I...
We can put a pin in that. Hanging. I might put a pin in you.
Is this a Norwegian thing or just a decent thing? That's, I feel uncomfortable with having that been said and not sort of do what I'm doing now. But yeah, okay. I had a thread and I lost it.
Was it to do with the Antelope?
Yeah, it was about the Shameless promotion thing.
Do it.
Because Janteloven, it's sort of a point of the discourse about the ceiling height in Norway. But it's, I try to think if it's also internalized. And I think in a way it is, because if you as Norwegian want to be self-promoting or to brag about your achievements or success, you often have to label it or mark it as shameless self-promotion. And I guess that is a concept imported from the English-speaking world, but skamløs selvpromotering, it would be in Norwegian, but yeah, so you have to take notice that, yeah, I am actually doing this self-promotion thing now, pardon me.
Almost like you're stepping out of the kind of the momentary frame of reference and saying, okay, just taking a back seat. And this is apparently a thing, according to Robert Lee, who's listening. Hi, Robert. At least I hope he's still listening. Who's a sign language interpreter. And if you want to comment, if you want meta commentary as a sign language interpreter, you literally lean back and you step out of the conversation that you were in and the space that you were in that's interpreting that conversation, and you lean back and you make a comment and you say, hey, I'm just waiting for this guy to, you know, like, find a verb or whatever. And then you go back into the space of the interpreting space and you carry on. And it's exactly the same as that, right? Is that you're kind of momentarily taking a step out of what you're talking about and saying, shameless self-promotion, I know, not very Janta, but, you know, here we are. I'm just to let you know that I noticed that I'm kind of breaking Janteloven here. Okay, now back on with the show.
Yeah, pretty much that. And for, of course, the worst thing is if you're self-promoting without being aware of yourself self-promoting. But that is perhaps somewhat universal for at least the Western part of the world.
Right. It's certainly the impression I got growing up that Americans were often like that. People from the US would be sort of unashamedly self-promoting, is maybe not the phrase I would have used, but that were completely unapologetic, and it just wasn't even on the radar that to be kind of very upfront and very look at me-ish was just totally cool, totally normal. And of course it's more complicated than that. You know, you grow up, you realize that, but as a kid, that was my impression of Americans, very, very brash, very sort of forthright, very, look at me.
But as someone that is in, well, has a pretty, I can't even do it, like, meta. But look at us. We have university degrees. We are in, I guess, good positions, privileged and all that. We sort of made it.
It's uncomfortable. Is it uncomfortable for you just even to say that? Because I'm uncomfortable just listening to it.
Yeah, I am. But actually, I think we need to have this as a more as a thing in this podcast, because I thought about it. We are doing a podcast about somewhat cultural differences and immigration and so on. And when you are calling in these topics, it came apparent to me that, okay, we have people that struggle with immigration and cultural differences and so on, that has it way harder than you and me.
Right.
So I got this, we have to check our privilege perhaps more often thing.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
The white man's struggle, right? Yeah. But
at the risk of being slightly self-promoting, the first blog post that I wrote about moving to Norway talks about this a little bit. I'll put a link in the show notes, where, like, the overwhelming impression that I got was that was a piece of cake. Like, yeah, I had to fill in some forms. I had to wait a bit. There was a bit of uncertainty. Big whoop. So what? Like, it was a drop in the ocean compared to other people's attempts to come to this country, or actually any European or Western country. And it made me very, very aware of how privileged I am.
So having got that out of the way, it sometimes feels like that. Sort of the... It's interesting because it's sort of the same thing as the shameless self-promotion thing. As long as you have sort of checked the box, it's okay.
Yes. And that's a problem. Like, yeah. If you can kind of go, oh, check your privilege, and then carry on sounding absurdly privileged and entitled, that's just lip service. That's not enough. But I hear it a lot. I used to hear it quite a lot in the UK, actually, people going, oh, I know, middle-class problems, but let me tell you about my awful bus journey today. That's another thing I've really lost patience with, is, and I don't know if this has come as a function of, like, striving to function as a second language and becoming impatient with time poorly spent, but people complaining about that little trivial, consumerist, petty things, I'm just like, really? Who gives a shit? Can we fill the space with something more interesting? I've become more impatient. Don't like that about myself.
Well, if it leads to less pointless frustration and complaining, I guess that would be a good thing.
Other people are still doing it, though. And now I'm complaining about them. Oh, I'm in a death spiral. It's complaining
all the way down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see you. It's sort of... it's back to the Maurice Bloch thing, because... we are still human in our everyday lives, with all the everyday challenges, and we need to air them sometimes. So it's something very human with that, because even if you are sort of a refugee, with sort of the worst experiences, I guess they also would be pretty irritated when your app just closes without any reason, and I would complain about it. So there's something that unites us in the bickering of small things,
I guess. It's when it tips over. There's what's his name, Eric someone, I think, who's this kind of post-Freudian guy, and wrote a book called Games People Play. Cannot remember his surname. I guess we can Google it. We'll put it in the show notes. And I'm not a Freudian by any stretch, but I really like it as a kind of a framework for thinking about things, because he talks about this kind of Freudian model of id, ego, and superego, and he talks about how people's behaviours kind of lock each other into the relationships between those three, like parent, child, adult. And if someone is very parental, it makes the other person really childish by knee-jerk. And adult is a good conversation because it's very kind of open and egalitarian. Misfires happen when you've got, like, child-adult or parent-adult. And that's where communication goes kind of wrong. And it's a really interesting framework for thinking about this. Like, it's, you know, it's completely unfalsifiable as a concept, but it's kind of interesting. And he talks about, he uses this as a framework to describe really common interactions. And one of them is, ain't it awful? And this is where someone says, oh man, you won't believe what happened to me today, blah, blah, blah. And the other person goes, oh, I know, right, I hate it when that happens. And like, it's just this kind of self-destructive spiral of people complaining about petty shit. And once you spot it, once you know that this exists, you're like, I refuse to play. And that becomes your new game. You're like, I'm not going to get into this. And cutting off people in the middle of Ain't It Awful is one of the worst, I don't know about in Norway, but it's like socially, it's one of the worst things you can do, is to cut into a conversation where two people are enjoying themselves complaining about a trivial little thing and go, guys, this is so petty. Can we not, like, is that a sin here? Is that like a social kind of faux pas to cut people off in the middle of Ain't It Awful?
I think it would be irritating, but it's not a cardinal sin. You wouldn't be thrown out.
Well, like, it's I'm a second tier kind because of sin, but it's breaking the social contract, right?
Probably, and I'm discovering that I perhaps am that person that would do that.
That would what? Play Ain't It Awful, or who would break in and say, guys, what are you doing?
Well, both. Because everyone is a hypocrite, but...
of course.
But yeah. Now I have the cultural version of whatever phylangst is in English. I failed at my own culture.
Because why?
Because I have sort of done that many times.
Complained?
To call, you know, called out complaining about petty shit, right? So, but I haven't been aware that I'm breaching anything or ruining someone's comfort in complaint.
Well, is it possible that in Norway you wouldn't have been doing that? It wouldn't be a breach? In the UK, it's definitely a breach. I'm not sure anymore. Okay. Norwegians, write in and tell us. Like, archetypally, in the UK, you would be complaining about your journey to work. Oh, there was so much traffic, or the tube was broken, or whatever. That kind of level of thing.
I think we have to take notice of what people are complaining about coming week.
Okay. You're wrong. That's our homework. Yeah. Nice.
Should we go into the cultural peak of the week?
I think we should.
You first?
Okay. I played shuffleboard a couple of weeks ago with my colleagues, and this is a game I've never played. The closest way I can describe it is to talk about it as curling. So it's one of the few sports that Scotland has been historically pretty good at. You have this long kind of ice rink thing, and you roll these big, big curling stones along it, and you try and get them close to the centre of the target and or knock out the other stones from the other team on the way. And shuffleboard is like a tabletop version of that. It's this sort of marble surface. It's very long, several meters long, and you have these little metal weight things, and you roll them along, and there's a bit of sand, I think, which is there to provide the kind of the equivalent sort of frictionless surface, and they slide along, and you get points. It was awesome. It seems to be like a hipster bar thing in Oslo. I think it might be an American import, but I never come across it before. I think maybe there was one bar in Shoreditch that had it in London, but I never played and I never went there. So it's like, it's totally new to me. And it's great. It's the perfect kind of, I've had two beers and I want to compete against my colleagues at something trivial kind of bar game.
US Scots may be good at the curling, but of course Norway has a history of winning the Winter Olympics in curling for many years, because we know ice and we have the pants.
Oh. Link in the show notes to the curling pants. 50% of me laughing right now is the curling pants, and the other 50% is your accent.
I think I'm developing this character.
It's amazing. Does the character have a name?
Not yet, but...
We'll fix that. We'll fix it in post.
But yeah...
The curling pants. Oh my God.
The curling pants. Yeah.
It's like the 1980s never happened. What is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
Is that your cultural pick of the week?
Yeah, it is. It is now. I have to shuffle my actual pick.
Okay.
For next week.
One day we'll get to your cultural pick. How many weeks has that been on the board and we've not chosen it?
I think 3.
Okay. We'll get there.
Word of the week. I can take mine first.
Sure.
DAB radio.
DAB.
Yeah.
And then DAB is?
DAB. It is digital radio.
What about it?
And the backstory is that this year, and I think next... We are turning off the FM frequency for radio in Norway. And why we are doing it, nobody knows, because no one wants the dub radio thing.
Why is it happening then?
Well, I think it was like 10 or 15 years ago. We decided that we should
go digital.
Go digital and go to the future and stuff. But
is it something to do with quality? You can like stuff more bits in or something. I forget.
Yeah, they say so, and you can have some. Well, you could also transfer what this song is named and so on. You can actually do that on the FM frequency as well, but yeah, there has been campaigns about how great DAB radio is, but no one is convinced, and the technology isn't actually that great because it's old, and especially in the tunnels, you will notice that. Cutting out the radio in the tunnels in Norway, it's not good.
Do many people listen to the radio in Norway?
Yeah.
All right. This is reminding me a bit of the kind of, CDs will never catch on. Like, I like vinyl, crackly kind of conversation. But yeah, the same conversation I think is happening in the UK, but we're a little behind. I say behind, I'm not sure it's necessarily the way to go. And I do wonder what happens in the event of a national emergency where, like, is it going to be as easy for people to, you know, I don't know if it makes a material difference if power is suddenly out or something. I don't know. Or devices are different. Like, can one assemble a radio that can pick up digital audio to the same extent that one could kind of fiddle around in the shed and, like, make something that would receive radio? Hypothetically.
No.
See, there's your problem.
So we will still have the FM frequency band, sort of. It will still be there, but...
No one will use it.
Yeah, so for the National Broadcast Corporation, for example, they will not air on the old frequencies, but in case of an emergency, I guess they could. So, but yeah.
Now I'm imagining all these hipster pirate radio stations starting up on FM. Like, it's the equivalent of taking back vinyl, right? Like, let's go back to broadcasting on FM.
Yeah, podcast is so last year.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll be releasing this podcast on Wax Cylinder and through the medium of cave paintings also.
Yeah, and next week you can tune in to 99.4 DFRX.
Right. My word of the week. What's my word of the week? Yeah, we were out to dinner with some colleagues of my husband's, and we started talking about backgrounds. Most of the people around the table were academics or former academics, and we started talking about Ovara Realist, and it hit me square between the eyes. Gosh, what a judgment. So can you describe for me, because I'm going to get it wrong, what a realist is in an academic context? A realist.
It's someone who studies the sciences.
Right.
Or natural sciences.
Right.
No, not even. Well, yeah. So everything from maths to engineering to... Not sure about the biological or medicine, but...
I think it was described to me as the STEM subject, so science, technology, engineering, and medicine.
Yeah.
So that seems a little bit harsh for, like, people in the humanities, don't you think? Are you not realists? Are you not concerned with the real?
I could rant about the two culture of things for at least 4 episodes, so I will not do that. But no, it's not... Well, I guess in the semantic field of that word, you would find meanings that sort of imply that they are doing the hard sciences and they are dealing with truth and objectivity, at the implication that someone is not. But no, it doesn't feel harsh as the label goes.
Okay.
It's pretty neutral, I think.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah. It struck me as very kind of othering of people doing work in the humanities that, like, and it made me wonder where psychology would feature.
Well, if you ask a psychologists, they would perhaps insist that they are realists, but we would know better.
Those 4 episodes coming at you after the break. No.
I actually had one professor mansplaining to me that, well, the humanities, we may as well be the smartest people at the university. But we didn't do anything that has to do with science. He dealt with science because he did statistics and he used the hypodeductive
reasoning,
mythology, popper, and so on, and blah blah blah. So, yeah, I think I asked him how he would go about history.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Do you know what academia needs? Jantloven. You are not to think that your methodology is better than ours. That's sorely needed in there.
Indeed. Where can people find all the links and the stuff for this episode?
Everything we've talked about that is available on the web you can find at smalldifferences.farside.fm, and a link to our Twitter account, smallforscheller, which no one is going to spell today. And I think that's it. Gosh, I hope we could edit this down to something less than 90 minutes.
We are almost at 90. Okay, well, now we shouldn't, because my boss told me that he needed longer episodes.
Right. You realize after his apartment decorations are done, he's going to go back to like 30-minute episodes, guys, please.
Such is podcast life.
We live on the edge.
Ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.